Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. Thanks for tuning in. We'll get your phone calls in a little while. A little while, we will indeed. The hearings by the Senate Judiciary Committee for the confirmation of Sonia Sotomayor are really turning into... I'm not sure what. The white male Republicans on this committee are making a few things real clear. I should say the white male Christian Republicans on this committee. They don't like women. Their entire religion is based on the ugliness and horror of women, what women have done. So their religion is that's a foundational principle of the Christian faith. I don't care where it's practiced. I don't care what denomination. That's a foundational principle that women brought evil into the world, and God punished women by setting them into painful childbirth for the rest of eternity. That's how sick this particular religion is. Mixed up with that Southern Christianity, that mouth-breathing, snake-handling, tambourine-shaking Southern Christianity, is also the bigotry against women in general, because, as Brother Dave said one time, women, they have always possessed what men have always been seeking. In addition to the bigotry, there is also the fact that a very white man like Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III, that is his name, Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III, he cannot handle the fact that sitting in front of him is a colored woman. That's right, a colored woman. Now, in the first place, being female, she unleashed all the evil on earth because she wouldn't do what God told her to do. Leave the tree alone. Secondly, the fact that she is a colored female, worse yet, from New York. And worse yet, her parents spake a different language other than good old American. I mean, this guy is unbelievable. Jefferson Beauregard Sessions. Now, the whole wise Latina comment that this candidate made in the context of something having nothing to do with her nomination or her judging or she was making, you know, there was a time, wasn't there? Maybe there wasn't. There was a time, though, when a wise woman was looked upon as someone who had power, someone who, now granted, it would have been in pagan society, certainly not in Christian, early Christian societies, certainly not in early Jewish societies, with one or two exceptions, certainly not in Muslim societies. And we always on this program focus on the people of the book. But women have always been denied their power. Now, there, how many, was it 100,000, 200,000? 300,000 during the 16th and 17th century, women who were burned at the stake across Europe and then eventually here in this country. Tens of thousands of women were accused of being witches, and they were burned murdered, drowned, forced to stay in their houses where their houses were set on fire. There has always been something about the wise woman. Well, Jesus, God in heaven, didn't Sonia Sotomayor hit all the buttons at once? A woman who judges? Someone who is... Now, don't talk to me about the two previous women on the Supreme Court. It doesn't matter. We are talking about a colored woman here. And we are talking about white males on the Senate Judiciary Committee who are terrified. I watched Lindsey Graham is slick. I'm not really including Lindsey Graham, although his questioning today really kind of pissed me off. Sleazy little oily Lindsey Graham. Like he was prosecuting a case, like he was seeking a life sentence for jaywalking or something. It was incredible. But Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III, the junior United States Senator from the great state of Alabama, and the new ranking member of the Senate Judiciary Committee. That's right. Keep this in mind. Now our inspector bailed. If the Republicans were ever to get control of the Senate again, while this little turd is in, has his seat, he would become the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. How much do you know about him? Huh? He served as an assistant U.S. attorney for the Southern District of Alabama in 75, 76, and 77. Then he was nominated by Ronald Reagan in 1981. To serve as United States Attorney for Alabama Southern District. I just said that. No, 1981. He was Assistant United States Attorney. Then he was nominated to be the United States Attorney. He held that position for 12 years. In 1986, and this is where some of Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III, some of his... acid starts to leave. You can understand where some of his acid came from. He was nominated for a federal judgeship by Ronald Reagan. The nomination was killed by the Senate Judiciary Committee, the committee he sits on now, which refused by a 9-9 vote. It was a tie to let the nomination come to the Senate floor for a vote. Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III's opponents accused him of gross insensitivity on racial issues. Jefferson Sessions allegedly made a variety of comments that opponents pointed to when he said that the KKK was not so bad until he found out that some of them smoked marijuana. Sessions also referred to the NAACP and the ACLU as two organizations that were un-American and communist-inspired because, quote, they force civil rights down the throats of people, end quote. At his confirmation hearing, Sessions said the groups, the NAACP and the ACLU, could be un-American when, quote, they involve themselves in un-American positions, end quote. One of those voting against him was the Democratic senator of Alabama at the time, Howell Heflin. Sessions was quoted then as saying that the Senate on occasion had been insensitive to the rights and reputation of nominees like him. And then after joining the Senate Judiciary Committee, Sessions remarked that his presence there, alongside several of the members who voted against him, was to Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III a, quote, great irony, end quote. This guy is a punk. He's one of those diminutive in every way, in stature, in intelligence, in sensitivity, in compassion, a diminutive little man, one of those little white boys that is produced always in Mississippi or Alabama. We have our crackers here, and so do they over in South Carolina. But Alabama and Mississippi just seems to turn out, especially Alabama, I don't know what it is, some of the most outrageously ridiculous punks, white boys, who wind up in the Senate or wind up in positions of power. And if you sat Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III down and tried to have a conversation with him, The son bitch probably couldn't even talk because his mouth would be just so full of grits and catfish. He wouldn't know. But the thing is, he's got to vote on that there colored woman. That big colored woman who sits there in front of him today. We'll have more on this when we come back. Oh, Jefferson Beauregard Sessions. Summer closeout is here. Hurry to get the Pontiac you want before they're gone, like the 09 G6, the powerful G8, or the five-door Pontiac Vibe. Visit PontiacDealer.com. Take delivery by 7/31/09. See dealer for details. About 22 past the hour. So Jeff Sessions, who was the most irritating of the senators who interviewed Sonia Mayor today. Jeff Sessions unsuccessfully prosecuted three civil rights workers, including a former aide to Martin Luther King Jr., on a case of so-called election fraud during the 1984 election. Sessions spent hours interrogating African-American voters in predominantly black counties, and he said he found 14 allegedly tampered ballots out of approximately 1.7 million cast. The three civil rights workers were acquitted after 4 hours of jury deliberation. On September 9, 2005, after Hurricane Katrina hit the Gulf Coast, Sessions called his former law professor, Harold Apolinsky, co-author of Sessions' legislation appealing the federal estate tax, which had lost momentum in Congress at that point. And Sessions left a voicemail that said, quote, John Kyle and I were talking about the estate tax. You know, if we knew anybody that owned a business that lost his life in the storm, that would be something we could push back with. End quote. Sessions was one of only nine opponents of John McCain's anti-torture amendment. See, he believes in torture. He believes that colored women should know their place, and that is cleaning his house, for the most part. He is against anything that grants to women equality or just equal rights. He's against colored people. He's against immigrants. Doesn't make any difference if they're legal or illegal. Matters not to old Jeff. He was opposed to the Voting Rights Act, which he described as a piece of intrusive legislation. In 2006, he was in favor of letting it expire. He has advocated the extension of FISA legislation to legalize the Bush administration's leftover wiretapping techniques. Hell, he may not have to do that. He compared worries about government spying on Americans to, quote, two dramatic errors some years ago in a situation just like this on a motion driven by our civil libertarian friends, end quote. And he said that with a real whine to his voice, our civil libertarian friends. Sessions opposes approval of the Uniting American Families Act in June last month during testimony by a 42-year-old Filipino woman who was scheduled to be deported despite being the mother of two American children and having a relationship for 23 years with an American woman. Sessions was audibly heard saying to one of his aides, enough with the goddamn histrionics, when the woman's 12-year-old son began crying during the testimony. He doesn't like lesbians either, unless they are in a movie for his enjoyment. Sessions is a pig by any definition. To Jeff Sessions, the only people that can claim any sort of civil rights abuses are white males. and only at the hands of dark-skinned interlopers and foreigners and women, especially them there colored women. Man. Jeff Sessions is terrified, you see, because he knows somewhere in the back of his little pea brain, his little reptilian brain, and Jeff Sessions, trust me, make a fist. That's about the size of Sessions' brain. Somewhere in the reptilian part of that brain, the primitive part of that brain, he's afeard that when the colored people, not just the Negroes, but you know, the world is full of colored people. And when they finally get control, like this woman sitting in front of him at this hearing, well, hell, they just might take away his privilege. He's a white, Christian, American male. I mean, golly damn, is there any more top of the heap than that? I don't think so. So Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III, who questioned Sonia Sotomayor today, has had just about enough of seeing all these darkies come in front of him and trying to get him prosecuted and not being very successful and then trying to become a federal judge and, hell, even some Southerners, even some other white Southerners on that committee all them years ago voted no for old Jeff. He never could figure that one out. He just could never figure that one out. We'll have more. Damn, I'm tired of talking like this. I got to get away from Jeff Sessions. That son of a bitch is making me talk like I got a mouth full of grits and catfish just like him. When we come back, we're going to have some Jeff Sessions in his own voice. Y'all, stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
Now one man's fault is another man's fair. One man's tooth is another man's hair. One man's hand is another man's stub. One man's feast is another man's grub. One man's dread is another man's dream. One man's sigh is another man's scream. One man's water is another man's wine. One man's daughter leaves another man crying. For every father's daughter, for every mother's son, the only thing the same is that it ain't for anyone.
I was hoping for a replacement when the sun burst through the sky. There was a band playing in my head, and I felt like getting high. I was thinking about what a friend had said. I was hoping it was a lie.
It's about 25 before the hour. One correction I got from Jane. There were 6 to 9 million women murdered and burned alive during the Inquisition, not tens of thousands. And she recommends that we read The Great Cosmic Mother by Monica Shu and Barbara Moore, M-O-R. Yeah, when I said 150,000, I had a feeling that was wrong. Millions. Men have always had a very, especially religious men, white men, Christian men have had a problem with women. Has anything fascinated white males in this country more than the wise Latina statement, the wise Latina statement that Sotomayor made, when she gave that speech? It has been so taken out of context, so turned into something evil and ugly and dark, as it's just astonishing to me. You gotta wonder, does anybody on the Judiciary Committee give a damn about the qualifications of a candidate that comes before them for the Supreme Court? Where are the, I heard today, all these half-assed questions about abortion from Lindsey Graham. And Sotomayor tried to explain to him what Lindsey Graham already understands, that the Supreme Court never ruled that the Constitution permits abortion. The Supreme Court ruled that a woman, see, there it is again, there's that word, a woman has, not just a woman, but citizens of the country or anyone affected by the Constitution have a right to privacy. All Lindsey Graham could focus on was the usual hot button issues. And Lindsey sits there with that smirk on his face, knowing that the folks back home were paying real close attention about abortion and about guns. And of course, a couple other little old things there that have to do with race. But Lindsey is not a mealy-mouthed dumbass like Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III. Lindsey Graham is what? Isn't he a colonel somewhere or some? Wasn't he in the Judge Advocate General's office? So Lindsey probably has more intelligence in his big toe than Jefferson Beauregard Sessions has in four generations of his goddamn family. You know what I'm saying there? Anyway, see, I'm doing it again. I can't, when I listen to those guys, I'll tell you one who's even worse is the governor of Mississippi. Oh, what's his name? He used to be the head of the Republican National Committee. Every time I hear him, it's just like fingernails down a chalkboard to me. There's something about that, and I'm not talking about the redneck drawl, the southern redneck drawl. I'm talking about that well-born white male Christian southern way of talking that is at once slow and it's all set with fox traps, or so the speaker thinks. Yes, I am very smart. I will talk like this with my little traps and I will catch you. It just drives me crazy. Patrick Leahy offered Judge Sotomayor the opportunity to explain her wise Latina woman remarks, because Patrick Leahy is a Christian also, and white, and a male. So, you know, I've heard one commentator say, well, that was his way of trying to preempt any attack on her for saying that. Yeah, right. Okay, here comes the judge.
Thank you for giving me an opportunity to explain my remarks. Words I have ever spoken or written have received so much attention. I gave a variant of my speech to a variety of different groups, most often to groups of women lawyers or to groups, most particularly, of young Latino lawyers and students. As my speech made clear in one of the quotes that you reference, I was trying to inspire them to believe that their life experiences would enrich the legal system, because different life experiences and backgrounds always do. I don't think that there is a quarrel with that in our society. I was also in trying to inspire them to believe that they could become anything they wanted to become, just as I had. The context of the words that I spoke have created a misunderstanding, and to give everyone assurances, I want to state up front, unequivocally and without doubt, I do not believe that any ethnic, racial, or gender group has an advantage in sound judging. I do believe that every person has an equal opportunity to be a good and wise judge regardless of their background or life experiences?
Well, Judge Sotomayor, I certainly disagree with your last sentence there. I certainly don't believe that every person has an equal opportunity to be a good and wise judge, regardless of their background or life experiences. Hell, look at that little squinty-eyed mole-looking white boy sitting up there named Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III. You believe that he could be a good and wise judge? Oh, I'm doing it again. I don't think so, Judge Sotomayor, but I understand why you had to say that. And again, these inquisitors are not the least bit interested in the context in which those words were spoken. They're not the least bit interested, other than abortion and guns, what this judge's background is, how she's ruled on cases. There has been a lot of digging by the Post and the Times and a few other newspapers around the country to check out her record. Turns out she's fairly conservative for a liberal colored woman. But what these clowns on the Senate Judiciary Committee want to know is, what does that mean about a wise Latina woman? Huh? Not realizing, of course, they're being redundant, but these are dumbasses. Now, Sessions isn't just going to let the candidate in front of him let her comment stand about the wise Latina on her very clear explanation that it was an inspirational statement to students. He is going to get to the damn truth. He's worked with colored folks before.
You've said, I think, six different times, quote, I would hope that a wise Latina woman with the richness of her experiences would more often than not reach a better conclusion. So that's a matter that I think we'll talk about as we go forward. Let me recall that yesterday you said it's simple, fidelity to the law. The task of a judge is not to make law, it's to apply law. I heartily agree with that. However, you previously have said the Court of Appeals is where policy is made. So I guess I'm asking today, what do you really believe on those subjects?
I believe my record of 17 years demonstrates fully that I do believe that law, that judges must apply the law and not make the law. Whether I've agreed with a party or not, found them sympathetic or not, in every case I have decided, I have done what the law requires. With respect to judges making policy, I assume, Senator, that you were referring to a remark that I made in a Duke Law student dialogue. That remark, in context, made very clear that I wasn't talking about the policy reflected in the law that Congress makes. That's the job of Congress, to decide what the policy should be for society.
You know, it must be extremely difficult for an intelligent person, man or woman, Caucasian or not Caucasian, to sit in front of a collection of dolts like Sonia Sotomayor is required to sit in front of and answer these half-witted questions. Oh, you're not going to play that. I don't know, man. We'll have some more from Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III when we come back. Right now, I'm going to take a break and go get me some catfish and some grits. Give me a plate of them there hush puppies, too. I like hush puppies. sure do got a pretty mouth. It's about 9 before the hour. I certainly am showing my prejudice tonight, aren't I? Well, you know, I don't care. I believe in, you know, comfort the afflicted, afflict the comfortable. If there's anybody who's more comfortable in this country than somebody like Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III, I'd like to know who in the hell it is. Even Dick Cheney, George Bush, Negroponte, those folks are all eat up with their demons. See, Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III has got no demons. As long as he goes to Wednesday night prayer meeting and goes to church on Sunday, he's okay. He didn't have anything to worry about because God made him white, male, and Southern. And that, what else do you need? What else do you need? God loves him. And it's evident by the fact of God made him the way God made him. And you can take your old evolutionary crap and just toss that right out the window. That comes from communists and colored people anyway. We all know that. So Sessions gets on Judge Sotomayor, in a manner of speaking, and she has to remind him that human beings are not robots. Well, okay, Cheney may be, but and Sessions might. No, Sessions not a robot. See, Sessions is just a self-satisfied, smug Alabama senator. I mean, damn. There is no higher peak for Jeff to ever get to. And sitting in front of him, he has this colored woman with the funky name who wants to be a Supreme Court judge. Can you imagine that? That a damn knee slapper. Man, oh man.
But yesterday you spoke about your approach to rendering opinions and said, quote, I seek to strengthen both the rule of law and faith in the impartiality of a justice system, and I would agree. But you have previously said this. I'm willing to accept that we who judge must not deny differences resulting from experiences and heritage, but attempt, as the Supreme Court suggests, continuously to judge when those opinions, sympathies, and prejudices are appropriate. So first, I'd like to know, do you think there's any circumstance in which a judge should allow their prejudices to impact their decision-making?
You believe he said that?
Never their prejudices. I was talking about the very important goal of the justice system is to ensure that the personal biases and prejudices of a judge do not influence the outcome of a case. What I was talking about was the obligation of judges to examine what they're feeling as they're adjudicating a case and to ensure that that's not influencing the outcome. Life experiences have to influence you. We're not robots to listen to evidence and don't have feelings. We have to recognize those feelings and put them aside. That's what my speech was saying. That's our job.
Oh, shut up. Shut up. Shut up, Jefferson. The woman answered your question. And don't you like the way these boys say woman? Woman? You know, you're a woman judge, and you're also kind of colored. I guess Puerto Ricans aren't completely colored. Well, some of you are, but, and I'm not so sure about you. You are kind of dark, but you know what? I can't believe that a judge would allow their prejudices to impact their decision. Can you imagine this slimy little bastard said that? He says, I'd like to know, do you think there's any circumstances in which a judge should allow their prejudices to impact their decision making? This from this little rat bastard who was probably a member of some white citizens council, thinks the KKK is a joke because they smoke reefer, and thinks the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, and the NAACP were un-American and run by communists. And he's asking somebody else about their prejudices and how it would impact their decision-making. Dear God in heaven, It's astonishing, isn't it? Jefferson, Beauregard, Sessions III. That is such a white Southern name, isn't it? Huh? Jefferson. That's just like William Jefferson Clinton. Jefferson. You know who they're talking about, don't you? You don't think it's Thomas. Well, by damn, I hope you don't. It's Jefferson Davis. Ooh-wee! Oh, man. And, you know, I did spend some time watching this hearing today until I just wanted to reach through the TV and grab Wolf Blitzer by the throat and just say, please shut up or I'm going to just beat you to death with a gavel. Please. You know, I want to hear these clowns. And for some reason, Wolf Blitzer and his little panel of experts, he figured, well, no, we want to hear what they're thinking rather than hear our own thoughts about what we're thinking. And to watch these unbelievable clowns on the Senate Judiciary Committee try to break this woman. And you know what? They didn't do it. They're going to try again tomorrow, though. Oh, damn, are they going to try again tomorrow? We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Has your computer...
It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. All right, I'm not going to do that again. The number here is 877-996-2556 if you have a comment on the Sotomayor hearings today. And some of these people who are determining or deciding whether or not she's going to go to the Supreme Court without a bunch of nasty stuff said about her. She is going to the Supreme Court. And there is absolutely nothing people like Jeff Sessions can do or Lindsey Graham can do to stop that. They can, and they know that. And that's one of the reasons the questioning is getting so bitchy, so nasty, just a subtext of ugliness. Lindsey Graham today acting as though he was cross-examining somebody at during a trial. And this freak Beauregard Sessions, I don't know what he thought he was doing. It just must gall his ass, since he was turned down by the same Judiciary Committee that he sits on now. It must gall his ass to be sitting there knowing that there is nothing he can do to stop a woman of color, if you will, from attaining a Supreme Court position, something that was denied him. Well, he couldn't even get to the federal judgeship level, and for good reason. I mean, you know, I guess the possibility still remains that sometimes members of Congress, whether it's House or Senate, can make decisions that make some sense. Of course, the thumbs down on Sessions was some time ago. Man, I have an update for you from Bob Alexander. If you remember, he and Vince Bugliosi Well, it was Bob's idea, but Bugliosi worked out a deal, I guess, with the publisher, and Bugliosi endorsed the idea, where a copy of Bugliosi's book sold to Bob at a discount price with money that Bob raised through his website. 2,200 books were sent out to county prosecutors across the country in every single county where there had been at least one American killed in Iraq, I think it was Iraq, man or woman. And, excuse me, the idea was, you know, with the cover letter, please read the book. You as a county prosecutor, state prosecutor, the county prosecutor, you have the perfect legal right, and here's the way to do it, to bring George Bush to trial for murder. And Bob and his wife, Arminda, and his friend Jude and some other people worked their butts off to get these things mailed out. 2,200 of them. 2,200. All the cross-referencing they had to do. Got an email from him. Today he writes, "Hey, we sent 2,200 books out searching for justice. We might have one district attorney who might do something next spring. Regardless of how the prosecutegeorgebush.com project turned out, I thought it would be good to know. Now I do. One guy, next spring, maybe. Bob." What else we got here? Well, let's take some calls. David, excuse me, David is calling from Valley Stream, New York. David, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, good. I just want to point out to you that Jeff Sessions' name, his middle name, Beauregard, that's undoubtedly named after G.T. Beauregard, who was a highly beloved Confederate general.
Yeah.
So you got Jefferson after Jefferson Davis, G.T. Beauregard, Confederate general. I tell you, as an African-American male from New York, I hear that name and I kind of get scared.
Hey, as a white man, as a European-American male from Georgia, I hear that name and I get scared.
Yeah, that's pretty scary. Wow.
Beauregard. I'm very nervous. I'm very nervous of people named Beauregard. I just have a feeling that they're always capable of a mass murder with a hammer or some kind of a knife or a club or something. You know what I'm saying? It just makes me nervous. Beauregard. Woo!
Yeah, with the white mask over its head, you know?
Yeah, I hear you.
Well, listen, keep fighting a good fight. Thank you for everything you do.
All right. I'm glad you found the program, David. Stay in touch, all right?
Okay, we'll do.
All right, man. Take care. Yeah, Beauregard. Jefferson Beauregard Sessions. I wonder if he had his ass kicked when he was in, middle school. I wonder if the other boys came up to him and said, "Come here, you little twit." I wonder if they whipped his butt. I bet they did. I bet Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III just had hell every time he went to school. You think? Now, you know he didn't go to school with people of color. You know that. No. But I'll just be willing to bet you that old Jefferson, when he went to one of those segregated schools in Alabama when he was a child, I'll bet you dollars to burning crosses that old Jefferson got his butt kicked every now and again with a name like that. Boy, what you named Jefferson for? What was it? Beauregard. You little punk. Come here. Oh, Lord. Tim is calling from Detroit. Tim, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I was listening to Graham's inquiring of Sotomayor today in the hearings.
Uh-huh.
You know, the stereotypes are flying fast and furious out there from these southern senators.
Uh-huh.
He was, of course, citing some sort of a poll that he claimed that lawyers found her temperamental, quote-unquote, immediately. I just got really furious. You know, that old stereotype about...
hysterical women?
Yeah. that and also people of color somehow not being temperamentally suited. I mean, this stuff goes all the way back to the 19th century, just the just the implications. I mean, they do everything but actually just make explicit racist statements. I mean, everything but.
Right. You know, I saw that, and I couldn't, you know, I was trying to, I'm sitting there trying to figure out why in the hell is he bringing this up? When you are a judge, I don't care if you're a judge in traffic court. You're going to irritate people. You're going to piss people off. And when the trial is over and the judge has retired to his or her quarters, you're going to have lawyers walking out saying to themselves, well, damn, boy, I'll never appear before that judge again. What a punk. What? Did you hear what he said to me? Did you see what she did? I mean, that happens all the time. Why would Lindsey Graham bring that up? And that answers the question that I brought up earlier. These Republicans know they don't have an ice cube's chance in hell in stopping this nomination, that this woman is going to the Supreme Court, period, end of story. And the only way they can do anything is try to wound her, try to make her upset, try to attack her based on who she is or what she thinks about or her gender.
And it's played to the base, too, obviously. I mean, it's playing to a lot of people out there who still have a lot of racist attitudes and feelings.
Oh, yeah.
And we see that in corporate America. You know, we see that how cars are sold, for example, quite often with white, blonde models. You know, we see it in a million examples, right? And he was just playing to this just incredibly, almost like, you know, 1840s type of attitude of people of color.
I hear you.
And it still flies out there. It's sort of a shame. But
Hey, before I let you go here, because we got a break, in 15 seconds, how's everything in Detroit? Is it still awful?
Yeah, it's pretty bad. The new mayor is trying to do his best. But the fact is a lot of these problems are ultimately due to NAFTA and WTO.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, I know. I understand. All right, listen, thanks, Tim. Sure. Appreciate you checking in. We shall return after the break. We have two open lines here. I'd like to hear your take on this ridiculous hearing today in the Senate. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. You might even wanna shoot yourself.
Go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malone.
21 past the hour. John is calling from Montebello, California, listening to KTLK. Hey, John.
Hey, Mike. Love your show. I listen to it all the time.
Thank you.
I just want to give you my background. I've been a lawyer 32 years, and when I was young, I studied constitutional law 2.5 years undergrad, teaching assistant at USC, and then a full year in law school.
Uh-huh.
I still struggled with that question on the bar exam. It had to do with con law, constitutional law. I'm telling you, it's so political. There's so much politics involved over the last 200 years that, you know, you can't use your intellect and your logic sometimes trying to figure out these questions.
No.
And that's what's going on right now with the hearings. You know, you can see it on both sides of the fence with the Republicans and the Democrats. She's going to, of course, make it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still going to be a one-sided court until we get at least maybe one more liberal on the court. And we're going to have to deal with it.
What let me ask you something. What was the purpose of Lindsey Graham asking this candidate if she was versed in military law? I've never heard that question asked. Of course, I've only listened to maybe half a dozen confirmation hearings, but I've never heard that question asked before.
Well, that I didn't hear that part of the hearing. I was at work today. I saw some of it. But, you know, that's a good one. Military law. I mean, look at all of the violations of the Constitution in the last 8 years with Bush and Cheney,
right,
and Rumsfeld and Karl Rove and Gonzalez, all the way down the line. I don't know what his angle is. You know, war is something that's embedded in this country, and constitutional law is being flaunted.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, maybe it has something to do with that, because, you know, there's so much stuff that's leaking out against Cheney,
right,
and Gonzalez and John Yoo, and, you know, it should be pouring out right now. And I don't know, maybe it has something to do with that.
Yeah, it's almost like that was a peek into the possibility that, you know, Lindsey Graham is still, I think he's still with the Judge Advocate General's office. He's still a lawyer with the JAG office. And I just wonder if he's not suggesting that Sotomayor is going to need to understand military law in order to make some decisions because of these military tribunals. And all this crappy legislation that's been passed by Republicans and Democrats just completely, and they've worked together, completely gutting the Constitution. I wonder if that has something to do with it.
You know what? I think you hit the nail on the head, Mike. Really, I think that's what it is. It's so awful. It's so criminal.
Yeah.
There should be people being prosecuted right now. They're war criminals. You know, 1 million people lost their lives in Iraq directly and indirectly because of our intervention.
Right.
4 million people lost their homes, and on and on. You know, listen to Fox News when O'Reilly took a week off, and one of those commentators that took over, I forget her name, but she had, you know, the talking heads on,
mm-hmm,
and saying Obama's an apologist, and saying, you know, he should be declaring victory in Iraq. And then a week later, 60 people blown up, 54 people blown up, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, you know, this country is great, and you hate to say compared to Nazi Germany, but come on, look at how many people have lost their lives over the last 20 years because of this country. I mean, people have got to wake up. This happened in Europe. It's happening here.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. John, thanks. I appreciate your comment, all right?
And listen, your show is terrific. Keep it up, Mike.
Thanks, John. That's very nice of you to say. I appreciate you checking in. I hope you do it again. Take care. You know, people make snotty remarks about lawyers sometimes. That line from Shakespeare, I'm sure you all are aware of this. That line, "First we kill all the lawyers." That was meant in a very sarcastic, kind of sardonic way. In other words, if you want to overthrow the king, if you want to bring tyranny, if you want to destabilize the society, if you want to be able to commit murder and mayhem, first, kill all the lawyers. I know I have a very bright audience. I'm sure you all knew that. Okay. We have a break here. We'll be back. If you're on the line, stay there. We'll take your call as soon as we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. Pontiac summer closeout is here. Hurry to get the Pontiac you want before they're gone, like the 09 G6, the powerful G8, or the five-door Pontiac Vibe. Visit PontiacDealer.com. Take delivery by July 31st. See dealer for details. It's about 25 before the hour. There is another one of these right-wing organizations that's put out a couple of commercials attacking Sotomayor in the past couple of days. It's disgusting. It makes me deeply ashamed to be an American. It makes me wish that there was some way I could stop this. And, not in a debate, but in a fist fight, or an ass kicking, or a clubbing, violence. Yeah, oh, absolutely. I'm tired of it. There's no way to get these right wing vermin to ease up. I think about the swift boating, so-called, of John Kerry. I always hated that term. all the ugliness and filth and poison that the right wing is pumping into our political system, deliberately designed to turn people off to the degree that they just say to hell with it and stay home, so that we can reach this fascist corporatist state that these right wingers want. And it's not just fascist corporatist state. It's also doing away with any kind of laws regarding civil rights or human rights, a woman's right to privacy. So if she wants to get an abortion, she goddamn can. People so-called of color, and I hate that term too, who have constitutional rights, white folks, believe it or not, stopping locking people up for carrying around a bag of reefer, all of these things that are just this, it drives me crazy. It really does. So here's the latest example from these vermin. This is a 30-second commercial that is playing, I don't know in how many different markets. And it's not going to have a thing to do with the result of these hearings. Sotomayor will be the next Supreme Court justice. But it puts this garbage out and into the minds of the knuckle-draggers in this country. Here it is.
Remember Barack Obama's buddy Bill Ayers, the unrepentant terrorist who bombed American buildings in the 70s? Turns out President Obama's done it again. Picked someone for the Supreme Court, Judge Sonia Sotomayor, who led a group supporting violent Puerto Rican terrorists. Is this radical judge the type of person America needs sitting on our highest court? What is he thinking? What was she thinking? Call your senators. Tell them to stop Sonia Sotomayor. Paid for by the Committee for Justice.
Committee for Justice. Jesus Christ. Really doesn't stop. Ever. Duncan is calling from Redding, California. Hey, Duncan.
Hey, Mike. Hey, I was watching the hearings today. You remember when we had the TV bricks back in the 70s? The Nerf deals?
The what back in the 70s?
The TV bricks. You could throw it at the TV.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I was so pissed when Lindsey Graham was on there and he put on his JAG hat. We started asking her about the military law and then what she knew about the Geneva Conventions and this and that. And I knew what was leading to the prisoners at Guantanamo and stuff. And there's just so much stuff coming out now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, in the last few days, we've heard about that General Gostom or whatever his name was in Afghanistan.
Dostin, yeah. Dostin, yeah.
Put all those guys in the...
The shipping containers.
Shipping containers.
And cooked.
I've been in a shipping container in California on a 110-degree day, and you don't stay in there very long.
No.
I mean, if they close the doors in Afghanistan in the summer, they're definitely gone.
Oh, it's horrible. And again, this is not a news story. This came out about 5 years ago. Which would have been 2004. We invaded Afghanistan in was it November of 2001?
2001, yeah.
And, you know, all that Northern Alliance crap and the Taliban crap. I mean, what happened over there to citizens of that country that, you know, that people who were rounded up. And it's my understanding, reading a little bit further, in those several thousand people who were butchered by our partners, were a lot of people who were just refugees. They were fleeing from the Taliban. They got caught up in just crowds of people. Nobody knew who was who. And the so-called Northern Alliance rounded all these people up. So a lot of the people who were murdered were just common folk. They weren't, you know, they're just used to, I guess, over a 3,000-year history of being kicked this way and then kicked that way and then kicked this way. It's horrible. It's horrible what's going on, what we're doing. It's just horrible.
Mm-hmm. I'm reminded of that fort where they had the Taliban, that first CIA guy that got killed. I forget his name, but they found the American Taliban.
Oh, yeah, Jeffrey Lynn.
Yeah.
Right. And he's still in prison in California, I think, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure he is.
I'm sure he is. Duncan, I got to move on. Thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in, all right?
Okay.
Okay, take care. Reg writes, Graham was trying to get Sotomayor to agree that it was legal under military law to keep detained so-called enemy prisoners confined indefinitely. He wanted her to acknowledge that military law is separate and apart from constitutional law. Well, I'm glad she just let it ride. Lord, Lord, Lord. Kevin is calling from Brooklyn. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Mike. I just want to say, you remember your Don Quixote?
Yeah.
Because this is what these guys remind me of. And the source of his anger is when he charged into the windmills.
Uh-huh.
Because it represented progress in the future, and he wasn't in it.
Right, right.
This is what all these guys are starting to remind me of.
Yeah.
The Jeff Sessions, the Lindsey Grahams, they know their day is over.
Do they? Or are they?
Well, they're going to try and stretch it out as long as they can. But deep down, hell, and this is no reflection on you. Even their own women are turned off by them. You see all these interracial couples all over the place now, I'm African American. I'm kind of, you know, it's like we've all had enough of them.
So white women are marrying black men because they've had enough of white Southern men.
Yeah. Okay, I live in Brooklyn. I live, as I said, in my neighborhood is, you know, going. It's amazing the amount of white female, male of color,
right,
relationships that are going on,
right,
in my neighborhood.
Well, I see an awful lot of white male and women of color and different racial backgrounds, not just African Americans.
I'm seeing it more of the opposite, and it's just like.
But it's with the younger people, and I think it's because people. I think this newer generation, and I would start with the people around 30, 35, and down. They're sick of the racism and they're not buying into it anymore. They're just saying, yeah. Look, if I approach somebody, if I'm man or woman and approach, another man or another woman, it doesn't make any difference, any longer to these younger people. You know, race is horse crap.
It is, but it's just like, again, the privilege that they have and all that. It is literally Don Quixote charging into a window.
It is. It is. It is.
And they're not in it.
It is. Absolutely.
Why is he going to come out with military law? You know, it's like, it's just sad.
I know. I hear you. Kevin, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Okay, brother. Talk to you soon.
All right. Bye. Take care. Take care. Yeah, I still maintain my contacts in the youth community, which is getting harder and harder and harder to do. But to me, the youth community, you know, is anybody under the age of 40, I guess. But I mean, you know, I mean the youth community, teenagers, 20-somethings and up to 30. And the feedback that I get from younger people is they're just not buying my generation and the generations before me the nonsense. They're not buying it anymore. That racial barriers make sense. I'm not just talking, you know, European American, African American. I'm not, you know, it's not limited to that. Racial barriers, ethnic barriers, language barriers, societal barriers, and you know that's the only hope, isn't it? Hell, I don't know. We'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. Them can stop the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs.
Screaming with Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour, Jeannie is calling from Coos Bay, Oregon. Hey, Jeannie.
Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
Good. I'm okay. Well, I'm actually so disgusted my teeth are falling out of my head. I can't take these right-wingers.
Which ones? Or just all of them?
Just all of them. But yeah. These guys with Sotomayor?
Yeah.
Okay, they're saying she has empathy. They didn't like that. That's a horrible thing, the empathy and all that.
Right.
But then that she as a judge, that's not good. But these same people that believe in a higher power, their ultimate judge, and I suppose that judge isn't supposed to have empathy either. They better God, well, hope they, it does if there is such a thing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it pisses me off.
They're very twisted. Conservatives, right wingers, these neo fascists, the corporatists, whatever name they go by, the Free Republic crowd, the Fox News viewers. This is a sad, not that I feel pity for them, but a sad collection of people. And I think it's very reflective of how the educational system in this country has just been in the toilet for the past 25 or 30 years that produced a crop of just brain dead people like this. I agree with you.
I know, and I don't think they teach critical thinking anymore in school. I don't know. It scares me.
Yeah, yeah.
I hope their so-called ultimate judge. Yeah, I hope.
Has some compassion.
There's no words. I hope not, actually, for them. They don't deserve compassion. Sorry.
I hear you. I hear you. Thanks, Jeannie.
Okay, hon. Take care.
All right, you too. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Okay, in San Francisco writes, Mike, I agree with your take on the chances of the Bush crime family ever being held accountable for their nefarious deeds. We were talking about this the other night. They're home free. Might as well accept that. Kay writes, I stopped hoping for justice a long time ago, and even though I have no illusions, I worry about how this sorry state of affairs will impact the younger generation. I will never forget the summer of 73. I was an 8-year-old child on summer vacation, and I was upset that I couldn't watch cartoons on television. In those pre-Disney Channel days, all three networks carried the Watergate hearings live. But as irritating as it was that I couldn't watch Roadrunner or Bugs Bunny, I understood that these hearings were very important for our country. My parents explained to me that President Nixon was accused of committing serious crimes, that our Congress was investigating him, and that if they concluded he had broken the law, he would very likely be removed from office. It was a simple concept for an 8-year-old to understand. There were consequences for breaking the law, even for the President of the United States. That summer, I learned that I lived in a nation that valued the rule of law. How far we have fallen in 36 years, starting with President Ford's pardon of Nixon. Unlike me, young people growing up in the post-Bush era will never be able to look back and remember how they learned that no American is above the law. Kay in San Francisco. Yeah, you don't have to reach back very far, do you? I remember the Watergate hearings as clearly as if they were happening last week. I was traveling here in the South. I had an FM receiver in the car. Don't laugh. And listened to various NPR stations as I traveled from county to county or state to state. On the business I was doing then. But I kept, you know, you pick up an NPR station, usually from a university and affiliated with a university, and you'd move out of range and then pick up another one. And I can remember listening to those hearings and just being stunned, but incredibly grateful that it was being investigated. That justice was going to prevail, at least of a sort. And, Lord, what was the committee chair? What was his name? The white Southern, the big guy who chaired the Watergate committee. Oh, it's right on the tip of my tongue. It's so long ago. You drawing a blank, too? Ah, damn. He's from North Carolina. I should be able to remember it. Good Lord. All right, don't send it to me. Don't send it to me. I know you want to, but I'll just do a quick Google when we're in the break. Irvin. There you go. Sam Irvin. Ah, I hate that. Great big old Senator Leghorn Foghorn type. Sam Irvin. Who brought the hammer down, didn't he? Huh? Brought the hammer down on that criminality. Those days are gone. Long gone. All right, we have a break coming here. When we come back, we'll take your phone calls. If you're on hold, stay right there. We're going to get you as soon as we come back. And also, I'm hoping that at the bottom of this hour coming up, we're going to have... Bridget Speaks. We haven't had one of those for a while. So stick around. Lots of fun and frivolity remaining. Don't forget, when this program's over, those of you who listen online, stay there because our technical advisor, Ben Birch, then plays for you and feeds to you Bob Kincaid's program from earlier this evening on Head On Radio Network, The Horn. If you haven't heard his program... And a lot of folks are not even aware it's there, although it's been out there for an awfully long time. But stick around. When our show's over tonight at midnight Eastern time, just stay tuned on your web connection, and Ben will start rebroadcasting the Head On Radio Network program with Bob Kincaid from earlier this evening. Okay, do that. I'm telling you, you'll be amazed. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. 7 past the hour. Welcome back to the Molloy Program. Thanks for hanging around. You know what we're talking about tonight, so let's get right back to it. Douglas is calling from St. Pete, listening on XM, St. Pete, Florida. Hey, Doug.
Hey. Just a little bit of difference about the containers and stuff.
In Afghanistan?
What really happened there was everyone, the Northern Alliance, that absolutely hated the Taliban and had family members butchered by, those were the people who basically were there waiting at the outside of that valley for them to come. And there's a thing, when a man surrenders to you, you're not supposed to put him to death, but it's okay if you put him in containers and don't open them for a week. But this is old news. I mean, all this right after they it happened. I mean, they found these containers, and it was all men. So your refugee thing was a little bit off. They'd had in that valley war going on for about 2-3 years against Northern Alliance.
Right.
And it was pure, utter vengeance.
Well, I understand, Doug. Thanks. I understand the tribal hatreds that can develop in societies on which tribal hatreds are based. But the difference was we had backed and armed and hired and trained and paid leaders of the so-called Northern Alliance, which, in my opinion, was nothing more than a collection of druggies and thugs. Remember, it was the Taliban. I'm not defending the Taliban because they're religious, crazy people who really believe. You know, Dick Cheney would like to apply Taliban rules to women as they're applied in Afghanistan to this country. Most of the Christian right would. But so I'm not defending them at all. But we had armed and bought and paid for the leadership of the Northern Alliance, and this Dostum was one of those people. We were deeply involved. We knew what was going on. We could have stopped it at any time. And the fact that it might have its genesis in some tribal hatreds or some tit-for-tat or back and forth over the course of the previous 10, 15, 20 years, that's all well and good. But the United States, once we invaded the country, then we changed the equation. Sure, people in tribal areas, I don't care where they are, in Afghanistan, since we're talking about that, have had differences and decide those differences in a very primitive way. If they can't be settled with tribal meetings, then it's kind of guerrilla warfare until one side says, okay, that's enough. But again, the equation changes in all of these situations once the United States comes in, because once we come in militarily, we are taking a side. We are choosing who we're going to back. This is true in every country we've invaded over the past half century, and they have been, there have been scores of countries we've invaded, overtly and covertly. But again, tribal differences, revenge, vengeance, yes, yes, yes. But the presence of the United States, the training and the funding and the weaponry provided by the United States means that we have an obligation in a world we all think the United States lives in, and we don't, to not let that happen. I mean, you don't roast people inside shipping containers. You don't torture people and hang them and brutalize people. You don't do that. And yes, in that society, most of the people who were caught up were males. But there were also refugees. Now, I have that from a real good source, so you can't just discount that and say, well, no, that didn't happen. So anyway, yeah, I hear what you're saying, but we were involved. And once we get involved, once an invader gets involved, then that's why the Israelis have such an obligation to the Palestinians. That's why the Americans have such an obligation to the Iraqis. It's why the Chinese have such an obligation to the Tibetans. We can go on and on and on with this, you know? And no, I don't want to. Bill is calling from Paso Robles, California. Hey, Bill.
Hi.
Mike,
I was going to go on a little bit more about some other, you know, not so serious things, to get right down to brass tacks here, talking about Afghanistan, which, and it is arguable till, you know, the end of time that this is going to be Obama's Vietnam, and Vietnam took up about 8 years of my young life, which I resent the hell out of to this day, and I'm 64 years old.
Mm-hmm.
To wrap this up, and if I could scream it, I would, but I won't. But if there were a draft, this United States would turn upside down in a heartbeat.
Sure.
Right now.
Sure.
The draft is the only thing that drove the 60s. I mean, you know, I was right on the front of the rocket, and all my friends were. But we'll never see a draft. But if we did, this country would, this country would change in a heartbeat.
It would, and you're absolutely right. The Republican or the fascist idea of they're interchangeable, of not requiring everybody to serve in the military, and if there are not enough people who would join for and usually for all the wrong reasons in these days, then you contract out the killing and the bombing and the destruction. And we're moving in that direction.
The only reason, I'll be completely honest, and every guy my age, would back me up on this. But the only reason we got involved in politics or anything besides just getting a job and fooling around, the only thing that got us even close to politics was Vietnam and the draft. Period. The end.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, thanks, Mike.
Yeah, you're right. Thanks, Bill. I appreciate it. No, there's no question about that. The unifying force in this country, the radicalizing force in this country in the 60s was the atrocities that were being committed in Vietnam. And it was all atrocities. Atrocities against our people, atrocities against the Indochinese. It was horrifying. It was just horrifying. I can't go in D.C. Anytime I go near the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, I can't go near that memorial without getting flashbacks. I don't know what other term to use of the horror of that period in the United States. If you were paying attention, the horror of what we were doing, everything from Agent Orange to napalm to the Christmas bombing of cities in North Vietnam, we had no more business being there than we did invading Central America, and we did that too. But you know, the fact that we dropped more ordnance on Vietnam explosive power than all the bombing, including the two nuclear bombs that we used in World War II. That was staggering to me. When you think about that, more explosive power was dropped on Vietnam, used in Vietnam, than what we used in the entirety of World War II.
But there's one thing I know. I'm younger than you. Even Jesus would never forgive what you do. Let me ask you one question. Is your money that good? Will it buy your forgiveness? Do you think that it could? I think think you will find when your death takes its toll. All the money you make.
The Pontiac Summer Clothes Lounge is here. So hurry to get the Pontiac you want before they're gone, like the 09 G6, the powerful G8, or the five-door Pontiac Vibe. Visit PontiacDealer.com. Take delivery by 731-09. See dealer, see dealer for details. Yes, do that. Try English, Malloy.
I took the back seat out. I put it on the ground.
21 past the hour. Mark is calling from Los Angeles, listening on KTLK. Hey, Mark.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
You know, this Sotomayor thing, there's not a lot of people that think she's not going to get it, which makes me personally think that they're using this as something to throw out flack or decoy us from some of the things that happened last week. The CIA is the heart of the industrial military complex propaganda. It's their hit squad. It's everything to them, and they've got to do everything they can do to cover it up. So
right.
I think all this Sotomayor is just, like I say, flack. Last week we had the CIA caught lying to Congress. We had them possibly being involved as a hit squad, and the son of Ronald Reagan had a milestone interview with Russ Baker, author of Family of Secrets, and talks about Bush Sr.'s involvement in the CIA long before he was appointed, and, the people from the conspiracy community, they'll tell you all this stuff all
right.
along, but
right.
now the son of Ronald Reagan is actually bringing this stuff out and giving props to the guy. You know, there's a lot of listeners, you said, that were sending you all this stuff saying, oh, the CIA doesn't lie and all this other stuff. But, no insults to anybody who's part of the Democratic Party who doesn't believe this stuff. But, you people need to do your homework. Go online and read the 2,000-page testimony from King family versus Lloyd Jowers about the Martin Luther King assassination. And mm-hmm. you're going to see the government was found guilty of being a party to killing King, and E. Howard Hunt versus Liberty Lobby. You're going to find that a jury ruled that, a CIA member and others were a part of the government, were part of killing JFK. And these two crimes were linked with people whose sole purpose was to cover up and manipulate the media. E. Howard Hunt was a trained journalist and writer before he even became part of the CIA, and their job is to manipulate the public and throw them off the track. And Sotomayor is a shot in the wrong direction. You should be looking at the CIA right now and what they've been doing, because that's all they're going to be trying to do. There's a storm brewing, and they're trying to keep everybody off the real track.
I have to tell you, Mark, we have been focusing on the CIA without let up for the past couple of weeks. The Sotomayor confirmation, I would disagree with you. It's not flack. There is an opening coming on the CIA or coming on the Supreme Court, and she's going to be the one to fill it, and it's very important. I still believe that who sits on the Supreme Court has a profound effect on how this country is and will be governed. The Supreme Court may be the only thing that stops this nation from going totally fascist. So I disagree with you that we should be focused other places. By the same token, all of the CIA stuff, that's all I've been talking about for 2 weeks. I don't know if you've been listening during that time or not, but, having worked at CNN and having worked in news organizations for most of my life, I'm fully aware. Oh, and also understanding how the major terrorist organization that operates around the world right now. That would be our CIA, how it operates. So I think on this program, I sound like I'm defending it, which I'm not trying to do, just by way of explanation. I think we cover these issues fairly well. I don't do guests like you hear on some programs. That's not a plus or a minus or a positive or a negative. It's just what this program is. And because we don't do guests, the dialogue is more between you and me. And some nights it's all monologue. And so anyway, I don't think the Sotomayor thing is should be ignored at all. I think it's very important to hear what these right-wing Republicans are saying about this judge's nomination, and the fact that she is Puerto Rican, the fact that she is female. I think it's very important that people in this country hear that. All right, we have a break coming up, so stick around. When we come back, we're going to have a Bridget Speaks and then back to your phone calls. All right? And don't forget, when the program's over tonight, if you're listening online, stay there. If you're not listening online, go online. Go to MikeMalloy.com, click on the Listen Live link, and you'll hear our technical advisor, Ben Birch, providing you with Bob Kincaid's program, rebroadcast from earlier this evening. Stay with us. And I won't back down. Well, I know what's right. I got just one life in a world that keeps on pushing me around, but I'll stand my ground. And I won't back down. And I won't back down.
It's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
25 past the hour. Or before the hour. Or something. Who cares? All right, it's time once again for another episode of Bridget Speaks. Hello, Mike. Bridget writes, although I've been off in fairyland teaching, traveling, writing, making a movie for the last couple of months, I have been tuning in, trying to keep up with the political world whenever possible. I'm not sure anymore which is the fantasy world and which is the real world. Between Argentinian soulmates, fishy Alaskans, and the mysterious C Street family, you'd think someone turned Aaron Spelling loose in the country, or maybe Mel Brooks. But none of this is funny or even qualifies as farce. What keeps it all from being entertaining is that these soap opera characters, plus Ensign, Backman, Vitter, Craig, the list is too long to waste time on, or they are just the visible tip of the iceberg, and they are just the visible tip of the iceberg. But these soap opera characters are every day making decisions that affect our lives. These are the people who decide quite literally whether you and I, our spouses, kids, parents, friends, live or die. They decide whether we have clean air to breathe, whether or not we have poisons dumped in our water supply, or the tops blown off of mountains, devastating whole ecosystems and the surrounding communities for generations. Should we encourage solar and wind power and attempt to slow the rate of global climate change? Ask these wise paragons of virtue. These oh-so-brilliant and well-informed white men and a few women decide whether the CIA can listen to our conversations and monitor our emails, whether someone can be locked up indefinitely without charge and without trial. They can choose how many children, if any, get enough to eat, and who can get medical care. And, of course, they decide on which foreign soil and for what corporate gain our young men and women will be killed and maimed. Mike, who are these people? And who are we that we have put these narcissistic blowhards in positions of such power over our lives? None of them, with the possible exception of Bernie Sanders and Dennis Kucinich, have the slightest clue what life is like for the 95% of us who are working way too hard to make it to the end of the month to have the means or leisure to carry on affairs in Argentina. Which brings me to the current healthcare fiasco. If there's anyone left out there who doubts that this country is a government of the corporations, by and for the corporations, and all those with extreme wealth, they have to be living in a cave with no contact with the outside world. Find me one person outside the Beltway who doesn't know someone who's struggling to pay escalating insurance premiums for more and more limited care. Find me one person who doesn't know someone who can't get coverage or is facing bankruptcy because of medical bills. According to the polls, 3 out of every 4 people in this country want some form of public option or single payer. But single payer is off the table, and whether we will get a viable, comprehensive public option is highly in doubt. Why? Because the same people who are busy becoming political soap opera stars get to make the decisions. This is the most blatant example of politicians raising their middle fingers to the people that I've seen in my 45 years or so of following politics. I used to believe, excuse me, that politicians, at least many of them, actually cared about their constituents, if only to get reelected. Of course, that was in the days when I could walk into a cafe in Minnesota and have a conversation about what mattered to me with Hubert Humphrey, and have him at least appear to listen. Today, if you're not carrying a checkbook or offering free rides on company airplanes, real people can hardly get in the door. And even if the politicians hear us, their lobbyist wives or the company holding a high-paying consultant job open for their brother speak with much louder voices. How do we get here? The right wing played on the inherent greed and bigotry of so many in this country and sold us Grover Norquist's famous soundbite about shrinking government until it's small enough to put in the bathtub and drown it. At least a couple of generations bought that idea, stopped paying attention, and now we have government that's completely self-serving and answerable only to their corporate masters for whom they've been legislating all these years. Is it any wonder they find their adulterous affairs and fascist spiritual advisors more compelling than the woman with breast cancer whose insurance company denied her claim because she'd neglected to mention she'd been treated for acne when she was 16? Real people's lives just aren't as sexy. I'm trying hard not to despair. I, like you and so many others, have painted on the Obama canvas the idea that he was one of us, that he gets the needs of real people. And I keep hoping that he is still a community organizer at heart, that he is still pushing us all to take responsibility for our representative democracy and make enough noise to force our representatives to do what we want. That hope, though, gets slimmer every day. And I, like you, am feeling betrayed. I may have projected a lot of things in Obama, but he was quite clear in telling us that he stood for justice and the rule of law. I see no justice in perpetuating a healthcare system that puts profit above care. And when Dick Cheney continues to walk free while Don Siegelman is sent back into a rigged courtroom, I see neither justice nor the rule of law. I don't know what's real anymore, Mike. I don't think this system is salvageable. I think the corruption is so deep that even if Obama were 75% of what we projected on him, it wouldn't matter. He's still one man swimming in a shark tank. I'm sure he's been told his place, as we all are, every time we're told by the soap opera crowd what's off the table. Please forgive me if you find me retreating more often into the fairy world these days. It makes more sense to me. As always, Bridget. If you want to visit Bridget Wolfe's website, go to fairywoodland.com. When she talks about fairy world, she's serious. Go to fairywoodland.com and see some of the amazing things that she and her husband John have created. That's pretty music. Where'd you get that? I found that? Oh, really? It's very pretty, but now it just makes me want to put my head down and go to sleep. Here's Hack, who's driving in Illinois. Hey, Hack.
Hey, Mike, what's going on?
You are, always and forever.
One of the Republicans, I think it was Sessions.
Yeah.
Didn't he ask something like, what decision or what facts are you going to overlook because of your upbringing, or is it because of your,
That question was asked? Are you serious?
Something like that. I don't remember the exact words. What are your life experience? What facts are your life experiences going to cause you to disregard?
Oh my God!
As far as I could tell, it was a total twisting of the wise Latina remark. It was a total perversion of it. But when this blows up in the Republicans' face, as I'm pretty sure it's going to, I wonder if Sessions is going to pull a Foghorn Leghorn and say, fortunately, I keep my feathers numbered for just such an emergency.
I hope he does.
I hope so, too.
Yeah.
Republicans so hate America.
Oh, man, don't they? And didn't you know when that statement that she made, are you on a boat tonight?
Am I on a boat?
Yeah, it sounds like waves.
I am not. The waves would be the concrete.
Oh, that's right. You're driving tonight.
Yeah, driving in Illinois.
All right. Well, Hack, thanks. I appreciate you checking in, okay?
You bet, Mike. Thanks.
All right. Take care. You knew there was going to be trouble when that statement that she made, and a perfectly logical, legitimate, fair statement in the context of what she was talking about a wise woman, Latina, addressing an issue that would influence more directly a Latina than it ever would a white man. And that's all she was trying to say. But you knew that when the reports of that statement got out, that every political white male in America was just going to erupt. You knew that, didn't you? Right? Because it was diminishing or demeaning, not diminishing, their privileged thoughts about themselves. You know, I'm white, I'm male, I'm American, and in this instance, I'm Southern. Oh, damn. You gonna play that, huh? We'll be back. Stay with us. Stand up. Everybody up. Let's go.
From Detroit down to Houston and New York to L.A. Well, it's right in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say that I'm proud to be an American.
About 10 before the hour, Thanks to the crew, Ben Birch, our technical advisor, Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent, Bridget Wolf and Bob Alexander, the ethical advisors for this program, Bruce Enberg, our economic correspondent. Our engineer and producer is Kathy Bay. A little business here. I want to remind you again of the gig coming up in Seattle, AM 1090, 2009 Town Hall Forum. That's Saturday, August 8th. And the participants are Stephanie Miller, Tom Hartman, Bill Press, Ron Reagan, and me. The panel discussion will be moderated by David Postman, former chief political reporter for the Seattle Times. Tickets are available now. You can go two different places. Go to tickets.showwarecenter.com or go to AM 1090 Seattle, AM1090Seattle.com, and get a ticket. This is Saturday night, August 8th. The doors will open at 5 o'clock, and the event runs from 6 until 9 with a break in there for, I don't know, go have a sandwich or whatever. But it's going to be a hoot. When I've done these before, I don't think I've ever had a bad time at one of AM 1090's town hall forums. It's absolutely interesting. And I would like to see, again, folks in Seattle who... don't just listen to my show, listen to the other ones too. But, you know, I have a particular interest in people who tune in to the Molloy Show and like to see you. So come on by, all right? Get your ticket first. It's Saturday, August 8th, 6 to 9, doors open at 5 for reserve seating. There's all kinds of seating, floor seating, reserve seating, premium reserve seating. And I think they have two tickets, so fly you in from anywhere in the country on an airplane for, you know, $10,000. No, I'm just kidding. Go to AM1090Seattle.com and get a ticket, all right? And then the other thing is the Molloy Show podcasts. Yeah. Those are good. We got some inquiries about people who said, well, you know, I love the show, love your website, but it sure as hell should be a lot easier to subscribe. I get to your website and I'm not sure what to do. Okay. Well, in talking with our webmaster, George, and Kathy and I, we have come up with a easier access to become a podcast subscriber. That should be up the next, what, tomorrow, next day, whatever. Should be up fairly quickly. All you'll have to do is go to MikeMolloy.com. Now, if you know, if you're the least bit web savvy, you know, it's no problem as it is right now. But, you know, apparently some folks are saying, well, can it be easier? Okay, and I agree. You know, I hate to show my web ignorance, website ignorance, especially when I go, you know, I go to, hell, I go to eBay and I want to buy something. I just sit there and just stare at it like, well, what the hell am I supposed to do here? Yeah, I know it's a generational thing. But anyway, we should have this, this new, button up pretty soon. So, maybe tomorrow, maybe the next day. But in the meantime, please consider a subscription to the Molloy Show podcast. $59.40 a year or $7.95 a month. If you go for the yearly gig, it's like 25 cents a show, okay? 25 cents a program. And that's how you really support this, keeping this show in the air. So consider it. MikeMolloy.com. And... do a podcast subscription. What is this? Another, this is from Baytown, Texas. No, I don't want to end the show with that. No, no, no. We'll do that tomorrow. It's kind of scary. The one thing I didn't get to tonight that we'll try to, tomorrow, this health insurance change that's supposed to occur in this country is starting to move into the phase now of how it's going to be paid for. This is really going to cause people like Limbaugh to just really grind down on his knuckle-dragging listeners. They're talking about a surtax to help pay for this. It would apply at graduated rates ranging from 1% to 5.4% on families with annual adjusted gross incomes of more than $350,000. In other words, starting in 2011, a family making $500,000 a year would have to pay $1,500 of additional tax to help subsidize coverage for the uninsured. A family making $1 million would have to contribute $9,000. Now, these taxes would rise significantly in 2013 if the federal government did not achieve specified savings in Medicare, Medicaid, and other health problems. So, the thing to keep in mind when you hear the hysterics about health care, about refiguring health care and turning it into something, as long as they are not going to go single payer, as long as it's not going to happen single payer, which it should. This is the option. This is the alternative. And frankly, I feel that somebody making $500,000 a year, a family making $500,000, should pay an extra $1,000 a year. I just do. But then, you know, I'm a left-wing commie or something. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
If you are faced